You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Gadlu, ganamiyuna tampinti, panayata matanya puki unanku. Gadlu tampinti ganamiyuna purapurana, pangarawamagana, ganakunti yata. That's the Garna acknowledgement of country in Garna. It means we acknowledge the Garna people. They are the landowners from a long time ago. We acknowledge the Garna people are still alive, and the territory of the Garna plains is exclusively Garna land. I've been asked to call to your attention a couple of notices. First of all, today's reception. Apparently this is some sort of special day. The service will be followed by light refreshments at 12 noon, assuming the speakers stick to their allotted times, at Spezio Cucina e Cafe on the corner of Osmond Terrace and the Parade Norwood. Due to COVID restrictions, only people with pre-bookings arranged through the church can be seated in the function room. And the Committee of Management nominations are needed. Three regular position plus treasurer are open to fill at the next AGM. A nomination form is on the organ bench just to my right. Please consider joining our democratic process if you've been a member for at least 12 months. Any questions? Ask a comm member. Well, with those notices highlighted, it just remains for me to remind you that all of our services, including this one, are available on Apple iTunes podcasts. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, and check out our website, which has a lot of archived material on it.
Blackbirds singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
Thanks, Michael. In a time of uncertainty, when everything around us seems to be changing constantly, we light this chalice to remind ourselves of our grounding in our Unitarian faith. We remember that the flaming chalice came into being as a beacon of hope during World War II, a secret symbol that offered help. In the midst of all the changes we face, may we wrap ourselves in the warm light of this now familiar flame, a reminder of the strength that emerges when we come together as a community of faith. Well, you are most welcome to this service today. Today's a special gathering for this church, as from today, your minister will be retiring from service after nearly 10 years. This special service serves us all by creating the spiritual space for both you, the congregation, and the minister to go forward in gratitude for what's past and in joyful hope for a future faithful to our Unitarian tradition. Now, preparing this service and delivering it has felt like distinctly like planning to be at my own wake. So to help frame this unaccustomed event in my life and in your life, in life of the church, I relied on established Unitarian rituals of ministry transition. And since it would be impertinent for me to do most of the talking, I've asked a few interested guests to speak on my behalf and yours. I had asked local musician Andy Salvanos to play today, partly so our congregational musicians can just be present rather than work, and partly because Andy played at my first ever service here as minister. But Andy became quite ill at the 11th hour and had to cancel. Fortunately, my old mate and muso, Michael Hill, immediately offered to step into the breach. Phew, and thank you, Michael. But no service would be complete without what we call a story for all ages. Now, due to COVID restrictions, I'm going to need to ask children to sort of stay where they are. There are a few images on the screen to maybe crane your neck at. Besides which, I put my back out, so if I get down on the floor, it's going to take three men and a horse to get me up again. So this story is a very short story before you go to Sunday Club that I hope you'll return to. I hope you'll come back to the story at times in your life when people depart from you or you from them. You guys know people can part company for many reasons. Sometimes they move further away. Sometimes they pass away. Sometimes they lose touch. Or they just decide it's better to travel in different directions. But parting is not all bad, necessarily. Where there's thankfulness, happy memories, and hope, parting can be such sweet sorrow, as the poet says. So here's a story that captures that sweet sorrow. Once upon a time, there was this bunch of little bugs that lived at the bottom of a deep river. And every now and then, one of the bugs would crawl up a plant through the surface of the water. And when they did that, they'd never be seen again by their friends. And one day, this one particular bug thought he'd like to crawl up the plant and see what it was like up there. So he did. He crawled up the plant, out of the water, and found himself in a strange new environment of air and light. It felt funny. And suddenly, he felt something was happening to him. And before he knew it, he had turned into a colorful winged dragonfly. And he flew and he swooped around in the air and sunlight, woo, up and down and all around, free, free, free. And it was the happiest he'd ever been. He was so happy, he couldn't wait to tell his friends under the water how wonderful it was. But when he tried to fly back under the surface of the water, he found he couldn't. He couldn't get down into the water anymore because he wasn't a water bug anymore. He was a dragonfly. And this made him feel very lonely and rather sad for a bit. So he thought about it quietly for a while, as you should do when you're feeling bad and upset. And he remembered suddenly all the other water bugs that had made the journey up that plant. And he realized that he hadn't been some kind of special water bug, that all his friends in the water would one day become dragonflies too and join him to play in the sun. Enjoy Sunday Club. Well, during all the swoopings up and plummetings down of this decade-long journey, for most of the time, I've been lucky enough to have someone who spent a lot of time similarly airborne and telling me how to stay aloft and navigate in the thin air as the horizon tilted and lurched. Fittingly, in a previous life, he was in the RAF. He has been the ministry behind this ministry. He's been the Virgil to my Dante, the magnetic north to my cracked compass, my strict captain, my gentle spiritual director, and my friend, Reverend Nicholas Rundle.
Good morning, and Nina Mani. I want to set before you another image which has been prolific on the internet this past week. The image of an older man huddled, wearing a mask, sitting in a chair, socially distanced, with some amazing mittens. Who is it?
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, and that image has gone all around the world. And maybe it struck a chord in the chaos that preceded the US inauguration. For those of us who work in health, we might say of the people of the United States that it was a very febrile kind of situation. So Bernie Sanders' image, wearing his mittens, made for him by a retired school teacher in Vermont, has gone all around the world. It's crossed boundaries never before crossed. His image has been inserted into famous TV programs, movies, famous paintings, and in all kinds of situations, from Iran to China. He sets before us an enigmatic image. And the Washington Post, on commenting on this particular experience, placing this alongside all the celebrities beautifully dressed and all the politicians beautifully dressed, has said that this enigmatic court, this strangeness, has somehow spoken to people in ways that others have missed. There's something about this image. And of course, there's something about the Reverend Rob McPherson in his spiritual leadership, in his journey, in his honest wrestlings, and in his service over the past 10 years and a minister to and with this community of faith and exploration. Rob, just like Bernie Sanders, is no quiet American, to quote Graham Greene. People we need to ask questions of justice, equity, but more than that, about the conscience, the individual and the collective conscience that is part of a collective and individual health. So ministers are there, we are here, to ask questions and to encourage us in the art and skill of asking questions about our lives, about our consciences, about the comfortable nests we make for ourselves, and to wrestle with those questions in ways which are skillful and meaningful. And ministers stand in a long line, a kind of apostolic succession, of a different kind maybe. People like Job and Jonah, Mary and Jesus, the Buddha, many Unitarians and Universalists, the lineages of heretics who have stood on the boundaries and explored the hard questions. And many of those people have found that that comes at a great personal cost, as well as bringing great reward and personal satisfaction. But at the same time, healthy communities require ministers who model listening and reflection. People who are present to their own souls, as well as to others, as they sit with us beside the bedside, in the hospital, at times of anguish, at times of despair and uncertainty, where the compass seems to slip rapidly from true north to the various magnetisms and attractions, the doom scrolling that can often enfold us. Ministers are there not necessarily to do things, but primarily to be there, to sit with that student who is worried about something that other people may think is quite insubstantial, or that person who is overcome with a sense of uncertainty or wonder, or has been gripped suddenly by a sense of God's presence in their life. In short, and it's part of my role in the service, to give what's called a charge, a ministerial charge, to the congregation and to the ministers. That's a long tradition in our dissenting understanding of Christianity and that wider liberal heritage that comes from that. In short, I encourage you to encourage your ministers, both those in the past and those who will to come, to model paradox in their life. And what is a paradox? It's a set of truths that seem to conflict, but when explored, take their hearer to another level of understanding, And I would say that that understanding is to see our own lives and the lives of those around us and the wider world as a place of mystery, of presence, of unfolding, and of goodness, of light, and of creativity. And that journey into paradox becomes by being still. The 19th century philosopher Rozanov says, "All religions will pass, but this will remain, sitting in a chair and looking into the distance." And this brings me back to Bernie, that enigmatic American politician, sitting in his chair, seeming to contemplate with a sense of wonderment everything that is going around him. Perhaps one of the reasons that he's captured our attention is he's connected us with an archetype that goes back to Aristotle and beyond, who says that the highest vocation of a human being is to contemplate life and to begin with that contemplation and then to move into meaningful action. When Bernie was asked what he was thinking about and what was he doing and what was in that manila envelope that he was seen carrying, he said, "I couldn't possibly share that story." But he said, "When I was sitting there, I was trying to pay attention. I was trying to pay attention." I believe that Rob, in the past 10 years, in this complex journey that he's taken with you, has been attentive to you, as he is at the moment in his new calling and his new vocation, journeying alongside the Pembroke community. But I invite you too to pay attention. And as you pray and reflect and think about calling a new minister, the name of course means servant, that you call someone who pays attention more deeply and takes you to that place of paradox and wonder. Thank you, this community. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for this ministry. And at the sacred moment of transition, may God, whatever God may mean for you, go ahead of you on your journey, to quote Deuteronomy 31.
Thank you, Nicholas. Although I was selected for ministry training in the UK, you'd know I've drawn heavily on American UUA discourses and wisdom during my time here. Now, historically, this church in Adelaide has drawn from both US and UK sources over the years, but Adelaide is as far from Essex Hall, London, as it is from Beacon Hill, Boston. However, this church is part of a global network of Unitarian Universalist churches and fellowships, and it is vital that this church stays connected to the wider UU movement, lest the tyranny of our distance turn us inward on ourselves and we lose that vital spark that only strikes off other minds and other ways of doing things. The Reverend Sarah Asher is the executive director of the ICUU. Sarah has been an energetic and capable leader in the global UU movement, and she has been a wonderful collegial support to me, albeit at distance, over the years. She can't be here, obviously, but has sent this video message.
Hello, members and friends of the Unitarian Church of South Australia. I'm the Reverend Sarah Asher, and I'm the Executive Director of the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists. I'm sorry I can't be with you today as you mark this important moment in your congregational life, so I send you this brief video message. I offer you best wishes and blessings from your international Unitarian, Unitarian Universalist, and Free Church family of faith at this turning point for your community. After 10 years of Reverend Rob's leadership, compassion, dedication, and humor, you are at the moment of saying goodbye. This is never easy for congregation or for minister, but it is necessary for both of you to keep growing, learning, and becoming all that you can be. You have done good work together over these last 10 years, and none of that will disappear. Even without the ministerial leadership of Reverend Rob, you are a vibrant, passionate, strong congregation who will, I have no doubt, build a new path to a hope-filled future. As you take these next steps in the evolution of your congregation, I ask that you remember. Remember, you are part of a global family of faith. I remind you that you are not alone, even when you sometimes feel isolated. So please, reach out, keep in touch, and may you stay steadfast in your free Unitarian faith, bringing a loud and powerful voice of our faith to the efforts of justice, compassion, and love for all people, to a bruised and wounded world. Blessings to all of you on this next new adventure. Be well, stay safe, and be healthy.
Thanks, Mike.
Love can make you weep, can make you run for cover. Grooves that spread so deep bring light to frozen ground. Something so strong could carry us away. Something so strong could carry us today. Turning in my sleep, love can leave you cold. Taste of jealousy is like a lust for gold. Something so strong could carry us away. Something so strong could carry us today.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to stay connected to our globally wide and historically deep movement because Unitarian ministry isn't ending in this state. It's rather expanding its scope and reach in South Australia. Most of you will know that I've divided my attentions over the past 2 years between this august institution and another, the Pembroke School. Both the church and the school have been incredibly cool, accepting, and generous in the sharing of a common resource. Although I confess I felt a bit thinly spread over the past 2 years, that happens when you discover you can love more than one thing at a time. But like any, the French have a word for it, cœur divisé, I think is the right word, split heart. It's seldom sustainable in the long term because you can't travel two paths and be one traveler. Church and chapel are different things. Church ministry is public ministry, open to the public. Chaplaincy is private ministry, usually in the service of a pre-existing institution. Think of prison chaplains, military chaplains, hospital chaplains. Establishing a new Unitarian chaplainship in a school is, I'm pretty sure, unprecedented for our movement in the entire world. My fond hope is that we here can establish an enduring bond between this church and that school, that the seeds of our free faith can find fertile soil in the broad paddocks of the Pembroke community for generations to come. I thought it would be fitting, therefore, to ask Pembroke's principal, Mr. Luke Thompson, to say a few words in this regard today.
Thank you, Reverend Rob, and thank you to this congregation. As Rob feels a little bit uncomfortable about organising his own wake, I feel a little bit uncomfortable. I feel a bit like the enemy within. We're stealing him. I'm sorry. But let me give you the context that Rob is going into, because I think in some respects we share a very similar path. Pembroke School was two schools. Girton School for girls, which was founded in 1915. It had no formal religious affiliation. Although many Girton girls and boarders would attend St. Matthew's Anglican School on Anglican Church on Kensington Road. The founding principal, Lily Smith, wanted to educate young women to university in 1915 and did not contain her educational vision within any one religious tradition. King's College, on the other hand, was an all-boys school. It was founded in 1923 and had both a Congregationalist and a Baptist heritage, but was flexible enough to have a Quaker principal during the 1940s. Partly, I suspect, because as a conscientious objector, Bill Oates was one of few able to fulfil the role while others went to war. He paid a personal cost for that. In 1974, Pembroke was formed from the amalgamation of King's and Girton, and at that time, constitutionally, became a non-denominational co-educational school with Christian values. So, chaplains were employed, ran chapel services, and brought with them whatever denominational allegiance they had. We had chaplains from the Uniting Church, from the Church of Christ, and from the Anglican Church. In 2002, more recently, the school developed its aims, five aims, and further refined its religious commitment with one standalone aim, and it goes like this: to encourage the exploration of students' spiritual values and their power to make ethical decisions. It is noteworthy because it no longer references Christian values, rather spiritual values. So we believe ourselves to be a progressive, liberal, open-minded educational environment. We have 1,700 students from ELC to Year 12. We have day students and boarders and over 300 staff. And we have many thousands of community members who align with many faiths and none. In fact, in a recent survey, 67% of those parents sending their children to Pembroke have no faith. In this context, we have undertaken to take our spiritual lives seriously, as required by our aim. So, it seemed to me, and on the advice of Stephanie, who had started to come to this congregation here at the Unitarian Church in Norwood, that the Unitarian Universalist tradition had much to recommend it to Pembroke, as it does and has with education generally and historically, particularly in this state. There was also, she said, an excellent minister operating there. So, the questions for me: who could bring a language and an open perspective to divine ministry? Who had a piercing intellect to engage with an intelligent school? Who would be up for that job? Who could wake Pembroke up? Who could fit comfortably in a rational, post-Enlightenment, socially progressive educational organisation that caters for a community with so much privilege? Well aware of all the contradictions, the paradoxes that proffers, but still wanting to search for spiritual sustenance, even if that sustenance is primarily to be reminded of our privilege and the responsibilities that accompany it. Who could do it? Who could steer us to the sacred in the secular? Well, we felt Rob McPherson could. He was the one who could offer approaches, ideas, and direction to all that and more. And in the 2 years he has worked with us part-time, he has done just that. Pembroke is growing spiritually, an exciting evolution for the school, and if embedded successfully, a fulfillment of the aim and a possible direction for educational institutions of all religious, non-religious, and secular persuasions to consider. It is a big and exciting and desperately needed exploration. So it is to this church, to you, the congregation of this church, that Pembroke owes a debt of gratitude. Thank you. Regardless of your political view of education and independent schools, regardless of any disconnect or connection with Pembroke, we thank you for sharing Rob with us. Pembroke wishes to build relationships based on a mutual longing to explore deeper purpose and from our desire to connect and belong. We wish to listen, to learn, and to share. We are ready for all three, and we hope to do it with you and others. Reverend Rob has made that possible for us, and we are very excited to seize this moment and build something wonderful across our 6,000-strong immediate community. We are just up the parade between Portrush and Glenburn Roads, physically. And our ethos is to remain slightly below the radar educationally. And we are now brimming with possibilities spiritually. You are most welcome to visit us. We feel very blessed and excited to see more of Rob. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. So that's chapel. That's church, like this church, is about making community out of anybody that happens to wander through the door. And its ministry only works to the extent that the collective can be mobilized by the minister. I have asked one representative member to speak for the church community today. He has made this entire 10-year journey alongside me, beginning membership at about the same time I began ministry, and continues with me in the ministry's new home at Pembroke School. He's been instrumental in every aspect of this community, from governance to Sunday club to social justice action. And I have personally found his comradeship, leadership, and sympathetic support simply irreplaceable over the last decade. So I've asked David Freesmith to say a few words on the congregation's behalf.
Oh, listen to this. It says here, position vacant. Clergy person sought to minister to a diverse congregation comprising theists of varying stripes and atheists and polytheists and agnostics and humanists and Buddhists and Gaians and the non-identifying curious and others who bring with them their respective baggage, gifts, from a range of heritage traditions, including Mormonism, Seventh-day Adventism, the Salvation Army, Catholicism, Anglicanism, Syrian Orthodox, Uniting Church, Baha'i, Islam, Judaism, and others. The spiritual practices include Tai Chi meditation, Quaker meetings, music making, literature, philosophy, yoga, Zoroastrianism, community gardens, volunteering and caring roles, and environmental and political activism. Their worldviews and political beliefs range widely too, as do their socioeconomic statuses, ethnicities, orientations, aesthetic preferences, ages, and personality types. The successful applicant will need to speak to the spiritual needs of each of these members. All at once, every week. There is no prescribed text, boundaries, or formula as to what you should speak on. But don't worry, when we don't like it, we'll let you know. Indeed, the successful applicant will need to be receptive to constructive feedback, which will be plentiful, fulsome, and entirely conflicting. Said feedback should be received at all times with smiling grace and nodding receptivity. Fear not, there'll always be next Sunday to get it right. Well, all of us here know that the person who can answer that call is rare indeed. And so we know how deeply fortunate we, this church, have been to have someone of Rob's capacity and wisdom, Rob's breadth and depth of both life experience and professional experience, to fulfill the call of this pulpit over the last decade. At the core of Rob's ministry is his insistent resistance and consistent warning of the ever-present hazard of that uniquely Unitarian brand of hubris. While never shy to articulate disagreement with other religions, Rob consistently honours other faiths and philosophies of goodwill, their teachers and their followers. He resists the temptation to rank our detached Unitarianism above them. Rather, than he seeks that which we might learn from them and points us to the profound wisdom and beauty stored in those traditions that we miss out on the moment we dare to allow, as the poet Yevtushenko says, a filthy microbe of superiority to creep inside. Instead of putting us above others, Rob casts us all as co-wayfarers on the spiritual path of search, fellow passengers alongside those of more certain faiths. In so doing, Rob shows us, very importantly, that modern Unitarianism is not, as it is sometimes cast, religion light. Rather, Unitarianism at its best is in fact religion taken very seriously. Released from the shackles of vain insistences and the mental gymnastics required by some creeds, from which many of us, including Rob, migrated or fled, as the case may be, Rob has enabled many of us to dare to return to concepts such as spirituality, faith, covenant, even prayer, and even to figures such as Jesus and to documents such as the Bible, to consider them with fresh, curious eyes, free from trauma, guilt, judgment, fear, or any imposed absolutism. The non-literal lens that our tradition allows, and here I quote from one of Rob's addresses, a non-literal lens approaches the teaching of all great religions not as assertions of fact, but as symbol, as poetry rather than science, an acknowledgement of mystery, as the realm over which we arrogant humans may have no mastery. Rob shows us that relinquishing religious literalism and metaphysical fantasy, as Unitarians generally do, doesn't need to dissolve the force of religious practice, as we may at first think. It does not require us to renounce those seemingly transcendent experiences of our diverse pasts. Rather, this lens makes the best of religion, at least potentially, available to us again, but this time, honestly, transparently, fully, a refinement and concentration of higher order strains of human experience that religion at its best can facilitate. But this isn't easy. A passage now from a 2012 address by Rob, to which I have returned over the years. People think that Unitarian Universalism is an easy religion. Actually, its openness is very, very demanding of us. Real freedom requires radical humility and radical acceptance of difference, things most people find just too hard. We don't have to be wrong for someone else to be right, and we can be right without making others wrong. In the end, there is no road that is right entirely, not even ours. Where is truth to be found? Everywhere, and no single where. So Rob interprets the theological landscape of Unitarianism for us not as an environment for reinforcement of what we already think, but rather as a productive site for profound growth and change. So often in his addresses, you may have noticed, Rob prefaces abstract nouns with the adjective radical when attempting to invite us to consider new ways of seeing and being. Radical humility, radical acceptance of difference, radical hospitality, radical openness, radical inclusion. Radical meaning fundamental change of our saying, of ourselves, change to the radicalis, to the very roots. Rob even dares those of us who may have long ago reached theoretical, moral, or emotional dead ends in our search for an understanding of that which we might call God, to reimagine those dead ends as instead thresholds. To quote Rob again, there are thresholds through which we may pass if we are brave enough to embrace mystery. Thank you, Rob, for giving us the eyes to recognize those dead ends as thresholds and the courage to approach them. In your time here, Rob, you have done so much. You've championed all love and all people. You led us in fights that we won and in battles that we are yet to win. Whatever the issue, you always led us steadfastly on the side of love. You represented us in the public square and in the media. You engaged with politicians and you raised our profile overseas. You got behind our tiny projects and our big projects. You encouraged us. You played with us and partied with us. You were a good sport. You listened to us and you laughed with us. But undeniably, Rob, your finest work in the role was here at this pulpit. Rob, you are a world-class preacher man. You light up this pulpit. And this stunning pulpit cloth, which you commissioned from artisans in your home state of Maryland as a gift to this church, will always remind us of that. We love you, Rob. We'll miss you. But your inspired and inspiring teaching will long resonate within these walls and within the chambers of our hearts. I call on our President, Jenny Dyster, to offer a few reflections and conduct the formal ritual of departure.
You may have noticed that the pulpit has been put up due to tall people today. I'm not one of those, so we've just got my box. I'm on my box. It's a pleasure to have this last opportunity as President of the Committee of Management to express my appreciation for the contribution Rob has made to our church. I was on the search committee that recommended his selection to the congregation back in those days, shortly after the global financial crisis. Rob leaves us in the throes of the pandemic. nice bookends. We live in interesting times, and Rob's ministry has always reflected that and attempted to equip us with the means to live connected to the world and also to the spiritual ground of our being. It's very easy to go one way or the other, and he has managed both. And I would like to thank the previous speakers for really putting into context Rob's journey from church to chapel. I think that's very important. A year ago, we actually had our farewell with cake and all sorts of in stuff that was not so much looking at the outside world. And so we were happy for Rob to mastermind this farewell. And I'm awfully glad that we did, because I was very, very happy to hear Luke Thompson. Right? I thought, gee, I didn't write the name down. Have I got it right? Yes, that's good. And I think it will help everybody to realise exactly what's going on. The addresses Rob's given us for years have been topical and challenging. And when we have visitors, they're not excluded by insider language. Our purpose and rituals are made explicit, and we have as a result a wide range of members who came from curiosity and stayed because something resonated. Our church has never had an anti-gay theology, but Rob went that little step further and specifically, explicitly welcomed people here, no matter what their gender identity or whom they loved, every week without exception. And personally, I think that's why we've moved from a position of tolerance to warm acceptance and a more open exchange of information and concern, genuine affection, in other words. Rob's full-time employment ended a year ago, and this year he's been on a part-time contract. 2020 could have been a disaster, with months of church building closure and having to find someone to lead the service 3 weeks out of four. But we've thrived. Most years, Rob has committed to educational programs, building your own theology, Karen Armstrong's compassion course, how to construct and lead a service of worship. They're just some examples. He has directed us to smarten up and get with it a bit. You'd notice the screen where the Dowie painting used to be. Rob was very insistent that technology was a good thing. The younger generation were more visually oriented and it would be an asset. And of course it has been. We've saved quite a few trees, not printing so much. We've had film evenings and afternoons and enjoyed the extra stimulation of thought-provoking graphics during services. Embracing social media meant we were better positioned at the beginning of the COVID closure to continue with church activity and connection. Rob inherited the traditional minister-centered Sunday services, but he has promoted many departures from the hymn sandwich approach to worship. Now, that's not to say that previous ministers haven't been innovative in this regard. They have. But Rob has encouraged others to follow suit, other people to lead cafe church-style services. And members of this church with particular experiences, skills or knowledge have been invited to lead meditation, small group discussions, vision talks, fix up the library, sing, play music, whatever. The flower ritual is a well-established one for Unitarians, but Rob has given us a few more annual rituals. The water ritual, the leaf ritual, a forgiveness one, and the blessing of the book bags. Now, some of these will survive his departure, but not without tweaking. When I do the blessing that marks the beginnings of the school year next week, it will be the blessing of the book bags. We may lose a touch of North American colour, flavour and charm, but not the essence. It will be interesting to select, for example, our theme for a month of observance, encouraging spiritual practice this year. We have more spiritual practices since Rob introduced them. Lectio Divina is another. It's a post-Christian meditative study of readings done monthly. And we do these meetings midweek, not on Sunday. Being a Unitarian is not about Sundays. well, it is about Sundays, but not only about Sundays, and may not always be about Sundays. Come to think about it, it's not about Sundays at all for a few of our members who turn up on other days of the week to do service or attend Stream of Life activities. Before I finish, I would also like to touch, like David, on social justice and connecting with community. Many of us come from faith traditions that we found to be a bit prescriptive, restrictive, and Unitarianism is a haven for people from diverse backgrounds. Unitarian churches vary in how they relate to other religions and politics. Rob has maintained a connection with the multi-faith association, which will continue. One way of dealing with diversity is to emphasise the similarities and commonalities of values and to gloss over the differences in religion and the differences in politics. Now, that can make an institution a bit weak and wishy-washy. Rob has used a very old Unitarian concept to enable our members to redress this without tearing the place apart, causing ructions. Briefly, it is freedom of pulpit and pew. We are free to express our opinions and to act on them, bearing in mind respect for the dignity of others. You will have seen Unitarians at climate change rallies or objecting to infinite detention of refugees or promoting marriage equality, but you won't find us as a congregation voting on resolutions and lecturing us all to turn up. So thanks, Rob. It's been a great ride. I hope the visitors from Pembroke will take heed that they will not just be the recipients of some brilliant presentations. You will be probed and prodded a bit to shift your point of view and modify your practice, but you won't be bored. We wish Rob the very best in his role at Pembroke and in his life, and we hope that the young people of Pembroke learn that religion can be rational, inspiration, and a source of solace. And of course, all are welcome here. Our church is constantly changing. People come and go, babies are born and welcomed, children grow up and leave home, loved ones among us come to the end of their lives. We've had a bit of that this year, haven't we? Some very sad departures. Others leave us moving on to new places, new experiences and new opportunities. It's very important and fitting that we recognise these times of passages, of endings and beginnings. In July 2011, this congregation called Robert Francis Xavier McPherson to serve as our minister. Rob, we are grateful that you came to practice your ministry among us. We laughed, we cried, we explored, and we grew as you shared with us the gifts of your heart and mind. Even though you will no longer be with us, we will cherish the many memories of the time we've shared. We'll miss you, but we're excited for the new adventure that you're beginning. Now, in order to facilitate a gentle and harmonious transition to new beginnings for us all, let us join together in a ceremony of releasing. Do you, members and friends of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, now release Rob McPherson from his role as minister? We do. Rob, do you release the Unitarian Church of South Australia from turning to you for ministry?
I do.
For 10 years, we've offered you our free pulpit and the freedom of creativity in worship. Rob, do you now hand that freedom and power back to us?
I do.
Do we as a congregation receive that free pulpit back into our hands and release Rob from his service as worship leader?
We do.
We thank you for your gifts of preaching. Rob, for 10 years, many of us have welcomed you into the transitional moments of our lives, times of sorrow, loss, crisis, and also great joy. Do you now return the ministry of pastoral care back into our hands?
I do.
Friends, do we release Rob from his role as pastoral caregiver, and do we affirm that we will use that care to offer compassionate friendship to all who join us?
We do.
We thank you for your gifts of pastoral care. Rob, from your first days, you've led us in works of social justice, inspiring us to build a better world. Do you now return prophetic ministry back into our hands?
I do.
Friends, do we release Rob from his service as leader for justice, and do we commit to taking the witness of Unitarian Universalism beyond our walls to heal the human family? We thank you for your prophetic social justice leadership. Rob, the light of our shared ministry will be extinguished today, but our respective ministries will continue separately. Our separate fires will bring light for the world in new and unique ways.
I thank the Unitarian Church of South Australia, its members and friends, for the love, kindness, and support shown to me these last 10 years. I ask you now to acknowledge my errors, my faults, my shortcomings. I offer my sincere apologies and ask your forgiveness. I am deeply grateful for the ways my leadership has been accepted. As I leave, I carry with me all that I have learned here.
Rob, we receive your thanks. We offer forgiveness and accept that you now leave to minister elsewhere. We offer our thanks for your time among us. We too acknowledge our faults. We also offer our apologies and ask your forgiveness. Your influence will not leave this church when you depart from it.
Well, I now ask President Jenny Dyster to accept on behalf of the church this ring. It belonged to the very first minister of this church, the Reverend John Crawford Woods. With it comes a formal valuation, an authenticating document, and a letter confirming this is a binding donation to the church. And I ask the church to pass this ring on and accept it back from each succeeding minister of this church as a symbol of the continuity of the ministry of this church. I hereby pass its keeping to the church.
I just had a look at that very cute little box that was purpose-made for the ring by John Crawford Woods. We accept this gift. We release you from our covenant with one another. Go your ways in peace, truth, and love.
I release this church from our covenant. Go your ways in peace and truth and love. Thanks, Jenny. Well, look, if you're expecting some blinding insight or oratorical flourish that will somehow cap the past 10 years, I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint you. I mean, there's so much you could say in the circumstances, but I found I haven't really the words to briefly encapsulate what this moment means for me. This church has been the one fixed point in my changing life since I first immigrated here in 1999. And in any case, after almost 10 years, and more if you add the years leading worship at Shady Grove, plus the monthly messages and blogs and RE and one-on-one pastoral chats, I'm pretty sure I've already said everything I ever meant to say, at least once. Happily, just about all the services are archived, and you can have a listen if you ever just miss the sound of my voice or want to crib some material for a future service. But if you want to see me after today, that's not going to be so easy. Once a minister goes, they have to step away from the congregation, even if they have been here 20 years and live just around the corner, as I do. And they must stay away at least long enough to allow new ministry to take root and flourish, which takes the time it takes. That is the wise protocol from centuries of experience, and I knew this day would have to come from the day I took the job. Whoever succeeds me in this pulpit does not need the former minister hanging around the place like a restless ghost. They will need your full attentiveness and your full support. It doesn't matter who they might be. In this stepping away, I am giving them my full support. This isn't the church of the Latter-day Rob. The minister needs to get gone before people become too personally attached to its minister rather than to its ministry. Accept your new minister as wholeheartedly as you can and do not compare them to any past ministers or worse, some ideal minister you'll never find because they don't exist. You must take them as you find them and think the best of them just as you would have them take you. After all, out of the crooked timber of humanity, no perfect thing was ever made. Some of you, though, may have found the dragonfly story a little self-congratulatory. But like most parables, it can be understood on a number of levels. In the context of today, it was the transformation itself I hoped you'd notice. That ontological change, a change in being that the water bug never earned but was gifted, exactly the way grace is said to be. The transformation was not and could not be sought, expected, engineered, or willed, but it happened anyway. This is like what happens with the gift of this free pulpit. Poof, suddenly I can fly. The free pulpit, the hallmark of our free faith, has the power to give us all wings if we truly dare to exercise our spiritual freedom. And that freedom felt to me rather like jumping out of a plane and suddenly acquiring a hang glider on the way down. To fly those, I'm told, there comes a point at which you must trust yourself to the lift of the air. So fly free, dear ones. Human freedom is the glory of creation, after all, and it is the highest manifestation of God's love. If you truly love something, you let it be free to leave you, to rise or to fall. You bestowed that transformative gift on me 10 years ago, and it has changed me utterly, and it is the happiest I have ever been, as well as an honor and a privilege, even in the sweet sorrow of parting. For that inexpressibly precious gift, the only apt words that kept coming to mind for today were, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Bless this church and its continuing ministry of free faith, and bless, of course, all of you. And my thanks to today's speakers, Nicholas, Sarah, Luke, David, Jenny, and especially Mike, for stepping in at the last moment, and also to the church admin team, Mary and Jenny, for managing the extraordinary COVID demands of this day. I would also be remiss if I did not also thank my long-suffering partner, Professor Susan Luckman, who has been my rock from before the beginning of this journey. I'm now going to extinguish the chalice, and Mike will play me out. Please stand as you're able. Though I now extinguish the flame of the chalice, may you keep its light in your hearts, taking it outside these walls to the world we live in, until we are together again to play in the sun. Amen.
Words are flying out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass and slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.